towards the end of the New Testament, there are 21 letters and written to different communities of Christians in the first years of the church throughout the Roman Empire. And perhaps that's very familiar to you and you've known that kind of forever. And perhaps that seems a bit of a strange idea to some of you that there are letters in the Bible. So I thought maybe we'd spend a couple of minutes just doing a little bit of background before we dive in. So who are these letters written by? Well, leaders and apostles, people Jesus had appointed to spread the good news about his kingdom. And some of the letter writers are named, aren't they? Some of you will know people like Peter, Paul, James, yeah. The letter we're going to be looking at today actually just says it's from the elder. But yeah, there seem to be pretty good reasons, and Tony went through those last week about why the church has thought generally that these letters were written by John, who was the beloved disciple and close friend of Jesus. So a little bit about the author, and perhaps you've always pictured like me that there he is writing, Paul or someone writing in a room alone. But actually, when we look at the letters really carefully, it seems much more likely that there were groups of people working together on these letters. And Paul talks about some of the people on his team, Timothy and Silas, for example, on his missionary team. And they collect the ideas together. In fact, Paul talks about notebooks where they collected the ideas for these letters and probably get a professional scribe to write them out. And then when everyone's happy with the letter, or particularly Paul or James or John, well, you don't put it in the post, do you, in the first century? I guess a trusted member of the team would take the letter and they would deliver it to whoever it's going to, the community. Read it out, a bit as we're going to hear in a moment, that the letter be read out. And I guess you'd have thought about that before. How are we going to read it? Put gaps here, emphases here, or whatever. Okay, so who are the letters going to? Here we are, small communities of people who've had the truth about Jesus, and they've come to believe that Jesus is the promised Messiah of the Jewish scriptures, and one who is the fulfillment of all God's promises to bring about a new kingdom of life and light and hope. Pretty dangerous believing in a new kingdom in the Roman Empire, because we know, don't we, that only Caesar was king in the Roman Empire. And the empire, of course, had grown by controlling and ruling and imposing its rule. So if you didn't conform, things could be dangerous. So here we are, these new communities of Christians with very little power and not much stability. Probably a dozen or a few dozen people. Where would you meet? Well, in somebody's home. Sometimes perhaps there was a network of these house churches that would be overseen by an elder or an overseer. And they were beginning to be noticed in their environment. So think about, for example, Roman culture. We know that in Roman civilization, there was very strict hierarchy. If you were a man and a Roman citizen, you were pretty near the top. But if you weren't a citizen, or if you were a woman or a slave or a child, you were pretty near the bottom. So the way these Christians were living, saying God's love is equally for everybody, breaking down some of those barriers, was beginning to get noticed, and it brought persecution as well. So could we, for the next minute or two, use our imaginations a little bit? Could we imagine ourselves back into those later years of the first century, and we're somewhere in Asia Minor, or modern day Turkey probably, and here we are, smallish group of people, a couple of dozen people who've heard the truth about Jesus. We've heard the stories of his life and death, and that he came back to life again. And that was about 50, 60 years ago. So maybe there's some in our congregation, some older members of our congregation, who heard Jesus, who knew Jesus, maybe. Maybe some of you came from Jerusalem and Galilee when people were thrown out of the synagogues, those first believers, and traveled here. And I expect we've all heard that incredible story of the guy who was the chief persecutor, Saul, who encountered Jesus. An amazing encounter with Jesus. Life was turned around. And then as Paul, he traveled around to places like this, bringing the good news of who Jesus is. So here we are. We're meeting in someone's house. I wonder who's got the big house here. And there's something really exciting for us today. Most of us know or heard of John. I mean, he was a close friend of Jesus, wasn't he? A really close friend. He's an old, old man now. He doesn't live too far away. He knows about our congregation. In fact, Last week, some of you remember, we heard out, didn't we? We heard a letter that he wrote to a group not far from here, the group that meets in the house of that rich lady. And we remember, we heard that letter, we remember it. John said, Jesus commands us to walk in love and walk in truth. He says, don't listen to people who are trying to deceive you. And if people say Jesus wasn't a real human being or wasn't really God, we mustn't listen to that. But today we get to hear a letter that John has written to one of us, to Gaius. Gaius, we know, we love Gaius. He's such a kind and generous guy in our congregation, in our church family. And we can remember when John sent those missionaries a while ago who were going around teaching about Jesus, it was Gaius who was the first to welcome them, wasn't it? He welcomed them into his home. He gave them food and he said, this is how we love each other. And that was quite a difficult time for our community. I think Gaius is the one in the brown, which are on the left. Because we've got another quite strong character in our church community here. I'm not sure who that's going to be. I'm trying to look at anyone here. Who is Diotrephes? Diotrephes is a pretty determined kind of guy. And when those missionaries came, he said, don't pay attention to them. Don't welcome them. They're not bringing the right stuff. If you join in with Gaius and welcome, there's going to be trouble for you if you do. It's quite difficult for us to know what to do, isn't it? Well, we've got this letter. It's arrived. It's very short. It's only one side of papyrus, which might be good news. 219 words in the Greek, if you're interested. One day it will become the shortest book in the Bible, or in the New Testament anyway. But I hope it's going to help us to live as followers of Jesus in the way that Jesus wants us to. I'm really glad it's Demetrius who's brought the letter. And he's going to read it, because one thing we can all agree about is Demetrius is a really great example of living for Jesus. So let's hear what John has to say.
The elder, to my dear friend Gaius, whom I love in the truth. Dear friend, I pray that you may enjoy good health and that all may go well with you, even as your soul is getting along well. It gave me great joy to have some brothers come and tell about your faithfulness to the truth and how you continue to walk in the truth. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children are walking in the truth. Dear friend, you are faithful in what you are doing with the brothers, even though they are strangers to you. They have told the church about your love. You will do well to send them on their way in a manner worthy of God. It was for the sake of the name that they went out, receiving no help from the pagans. We ought therefore to show hospitality to such men, so that we may work together in the truth. I wrote to the church, but Diotrephes, who loves to be first, will have nothing to do with us. So if I come, I will call attention to what he is doing, gossiping maliciously about us. Not satisfied with that, he refuses to welcome the brothers. He also stops those who want to do so and puts them out of the church. Dear friend, do not imitate what is evil, but what is good. Anyone who does what is good is from God. Anyone who does what is evil has not seen God. Demetrius is well spoken of by everyone, and even by the truth itself. We also speak well of him, and you know that our testimony is true. I have much to write you, but I do not want to do so with pen and ink. I hope to see you soon, and we will talk face to face. Peace to you. The friends here send their greetings. Greet the friends there by name.
Last week we saw that truth and love are to be key elements of our Christian life. And John warned, didn't he, in his second letter, that there would be people, there were people who were teaching false things about Jesus. And John says, don't have anything to do with such lies. And if you were here last week, you might remember how Tony sort of helped us to understand, as we looked at that letter, how the first Christians in the early church worked through and agreed on the fundamentals of the Christian faith. Walk in truth and love one another. But how do we do that? What does that mean? What does that look like? It seems to me that some of us perhaps are more naturally pulled towards truth, and some of us maybe a bit more towards love. I don't know if you think that's true or not. Are you a head person or a heart person? I don't know. What do you think is most important, truth or love? What about for you? Are you a bit more of a thoughts person or a feelings person? Perhaps you're all perfectly balanced, which would be great. Has anyone here ever heard of the Myers-Briggs indicator? Yeah, quite a few of you. It's a kind of assessment. It's a sort of psychometric test, maybe. Oh, Emma's done it last week. Oh, I might be picking on you in a minute then. Well, you have to answer lots of questions, and it tells you different aspects. It reveals to you different aspects of your sort of personality type, and the aim of being used within organisations and working well in teams and so on. About 20 years ago, a friend persuaded me to go to one of these. And one of the indicators, I don't know if you can read that, it reveals whether you're more a thinking or a feeling type of person. And some of the indicators are here. Unfortunately, I can't see that one, and I can't read that one over there because my eyesight's too awful. So if you can read it, I don't know if some of them are thinking, yeah, are you more a sort of a thinking person? You tend not to show emotions readily. You might be a bit uncomfortable when other people show emotion, but you like sort of analysing, sort of deciding with your head, sort of logically taking long views. Or perhaps you feel, you know, I'm a bit more of a feelings person. I go a bit more by personal conviction, and I relate well to lots of people. I tend to be quite sympathetic. I think most of you know me, probably can tell which one I am. But anyway, I wonder where you place yourself on there. Or again, perhaps you feel you're in the middle. Perhaps it might be easier to think where you place someone else. I don't know. How important is it to believe the right things? And what do we do when Christians disagree? What do we think if the leadership of the church are making wrong decisions? Should we correct them? Leave? What we can see from the world of 3 John is that people were asking some of these same questions. Being a Christian, being a follower of Jesus, is it mostly about believing the right things or something else? And I think this little letter is really, really practical in pointing us to a couple of real life examples of Christian life and walking in the truth. One is good and one is bad. One echoey. So it's just a 2-point sermon this morning. A good example and a bad example. So let's start off with Gaius. Walking in the truth, how can we be more like Gaius? John's dear friend, who he addresses, Agapetos. Is that possible to make that a little bit less? Or is it me? Okay. Agapetos is the Greek word for dear friend. And some of you recognising that agape word, which is that special word, isn't it, for the love with which God loves us and with which we're to love other people. Here's a man whose life gives John enormous joy. John's praying for his physical health, isn't he? But he says, I want it to be as good as your spiritual health because you're doing well there. We know that Gaius walks in the truth. Now let's think a bit about that. Gaius walks in the truth. Does John then tell us all the right things that Gaius believed? Does he list his correct doctrines that he holds? Well, I think Gaius did hold correct doctrines, but how people saw that come out was in his life, wasn't it? In how he acted. Because what John commends him for in this letter is his love, his faithful, practical love for other people, serving others in hospitality, even to strangers, and doing that really faithfully. Well, hospitality, I guess, in the first century looked a bit different in the early church to it might look today. Christianity exploding in the Roman Empire, churches forming everywhere. These missionaries on the road, like the ones that we've read about, sent from John, And of course, they came to your village. They couldn't stay in a Holiday Inn or something. They're dependent on one of us to put them up and give them food. And these people were on a mission for Jesus. And John talks about that, doesn't he? He says they went in for the sake of the name. And Gaius wanted to support that mission. He wanted to support this mission for the sake of the name, because he walked in truth. Gaius knew the truth about Jesus, and he wanted to behave in accordance with that. And you might be saying, well, hang on, Debbie, how do you know that? Well, can we take one example? Think about those last words, recorded words of Jesus to his followers on earth. This is what he said, wasn't it? All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I've commanded you. Gaius believed that. He believed that Jesus has all authority, that as we were singing earlier, every knee shall bow before him. He has all authority in heaven and on earth, and he should do what Jesus said. And of course, those missionaries who came believed that as well. They believed that they were going to make disciples. It shaped their behavior. This is what Jesus has called us to do. So example one, here's our first challenge. John says, imitate what's good. So how are you doing in being a Gaius? And how am I doing in being like Gaius? Do we believe that Jesus has all authority, as we were singing, that he's king, that he's above everything, and that we should do what he says? And so, if so, do we see it as our responsibility and our privilege to be part of that mission, to bring the good news to other people of Jesus and to make disciples? Some were sent as missionaries. Their part was to go, to travel, to go somewhere else, bring the good news of Jesus where he called them to go. And some people are still called to go. How grateful are we, not really as an aside, but as an important part of this, for Simon and Karina and family, that they heard a call from God to come to Christchurch from the depths of wherever you lived before. And that you were willing to leave your home and the friends that you had there and come to you. Thank you. God calls some to go. And some, like Gaius, support the mission in other ways. So we're still called to be part of that mission of bringing Jesus to our world. So what part could we play? Do we play? Is God calling us to be faithful in prayer for his mission to the world? Is he asking us to be more faithful in prayer for people to come to know Jesus, both here and in other parts of the world? Or maybe to write a letter of encouragement to a missionary or even a church leader. Support financially. Claire was talking about that earlier. Or to give us to give time, befriending at CAP, or coming to coffee drop-in and chatting to people, or making refreshments for those who come to toddler group, beyond Bev's team. To be part of the welcome team, perhaps, and be a friendly face that people see when they come into church. So challenge one, what might God be calling you or me to do as part of this mission of bringing Jesus to the world? And would John be as encouraged at seeing my faith and your faith shaping our lives as he was by looking at Gaius's life? We don't know what Gaius's physical health was like. John prayed for it, didn't he? But we do know that all was well with his soul. And I think Gaius is a really good example to us as someone who used the resources he had for Jesus' sake. And he didn't do it sketchily, did he? John makes a point of saying he's done it faithfully. He's done it excellently. He's been a good and faithful servant. Towards the end of Matthew in chapter 25, we read that Jesus said that a picture of God's kingdom is like a man returning, a master returning from a journey. And some of you remember this story of Jesus. And he finds what his servants have done with whatever he entrusted to them. And to those who faithfully use what they've been given for the master's sake, He praised them, like Gaius, didn't he? Well done, good and faithful servant. I wonder if that's how Jesus welcomed Gaius into heaven one day. Good and faithful servant. Wouldn't it be wonderful to hear those words from Jesus? Okay, that's a short one this morning. That's example number one. Here we are, example number two. If we want to be like Gaius, or we should want to be like Gaius, we should not want to be like Diotrephes. Took me a long time to think about the pronunciation of that, by the way, but I'm pretty sure on it now. So 3 John gave us a good example of how Jesus followers should walk in truth and love, but we've got an example of how not to do it as well, haven't we, with Diotrephes. What is it that he's doing well? Did you notice from the letter? Is he one of the false teachers that we heard about last week? Not as far as we know. It appears to be his character, his heart, that's the problem. Well, we've already talked about, haven't we, or noted that what we believe comes out in how we act. And Diotrephes' attitude and his beliefs are certainly revealed in how he acts. So John talks about the way he's gossiping maliciously about John and his team. And that's a lovely word there in the original. Again, it's a kind of bubbling up with hot air words. Quite a graphic image. So rather than having a Christ-like attitude of serving others, putting others first, serving Jesus, as Gaius demonstrated, Diotrephes loves to put himself first. And that comes out in the way he talks about others and behaves towards others. Bubbles up in his words and actions, quite nasty words. Diotrephes loves to be first. Oh, that is not right. Let's go back. Diotrephes loves to be first, and his pride is causing problems in the church. I don't know if he was a church leader or not, but certainly he's having influence on other people. He wants nothing to do with John, the elder. He refuses to be hospitable to the travelling missionaries, and he tries to make sure no one else helps them too. In fact, John says he'll need to be spoken to by the church leaders so his actions don't hinder God's work in the church. That's Diotrephes. Could there be Diotrephes in the church today? Could there be a Diotrephes in our church? Am I ever like Diotrephes? Well, I think that's a warning, again, that if we ever catch ourselves seeking to serve ourselves rather than Christ, or using other Christians for our own ego trip, or being concerned about our status in the church, or talking down other believers in our conversations. Oh, she's always like that. Yes, he's always difficult like this. Perhaps that's a good time for us to come before God and say sorry and ask him to change our heart. And we remember perhaps that Jesus had some pretty strong words, particularly for church leaders and those of us in any kind of leadership role, should take notice of this in Mark 12. He said, people who strut about full of themselves and with little care for others, they should be warned that they will be punished most severely. Let's go back to our head and heart. Where did you see yourself earlier? More of a head person or a heart person? Perhaps you see yourself as more of a feeling person. I was really tempted to pick on sort of examples here, but I am absolutely not going to do that. But I think some of you, I just feel are really great at accepting people, at being perceptive about how other people are feeling, about understanding others. If you're more of a feelings person, perhaps these two letters of John that we've looked at challenge us a bit as to whether we care enough about walking in truth. And I guess there might be a challenge. Are we tempted sometimes to behave in certain ways because we want people to like us, or perhaps compromise on things because we want to be loved? That's very important to us, to be loved by other people. Maybe there's a Christian who's a really great example of walking in the truth, who could be imitated. Or perhaps you're more on the thinking, judging side. Some of us really enjoy the analysing and the critiquing, and perhaps we've got something to learn here about walking in love. And maybe we've got a lot to learn from examples we can see in the church of people who are just overflowing with love and ready to overlook fault and bringing harmony. Because those of us who do lean a little bit that way know that with our own limited brains and logic, we're never going to know the whole truth, are we? We never really know the whole truth about a situation, and we never see the whole picture perfectly. I was thinking about how even sort of great Christians that we admire in history, who've done amazing things and followed Jesus, but sometimes when you look at things they said, they're terrible. And you think, how could they have thought that? How could Luther have said that about women? It's shocking. But what are people in 100 years going to think about some of the things that we think and say? Because we're limited, aren't we? We're limited in our time and culture to a large extent. So we mustn't be like Diotrephes, and we need to be humble. We need to be humble. And perhaps this whole thing about being a thought and feeling person anyway just shows we're much too influenced by Greek philosophy, but that's maybe for another time. I don't really see that division in Bible thinking at all. If only there was someone who was a perfect example of walking in the truth. Somebody who is truth and who is also a perfect example of love. Someone who is love. Someone incredibly whose words haven't aged over time. Even at a distance of 2,000 years, which I think is absolutely unique, everything we know that they said is still respected today in different places and cultures in the world. Incredible. Somebody who knows all the truth about everything, including the truth about you and me. Someone who takes seriously all the bad stuff that you and I do, and knows that those things must be dealt with because their judgment is perfect. That's a bit scary. But even more than that, because Jesus was perfectly good and perfectly loving, he went to the cross of Calvary to pay that price for what you and I have done wrong. He made it possible for us to be accepted by a holy God and brought out of darkness into his kingdom of light. And if we've received that wonderful free gift of grace, isn't that why we want to be part of his mission in the world and to let the whole world know the good news of Jesus? Because here is love, vast as the ocean, where heaven's peace and perfect justice kiss the guilty world in love. So Jesus, we thank you that you lived a perfect life and went to the cross for us. Jesus, we want to be part of your mission to bring light to the world, and we ask you to help us to serve you and to serve others faithfully. And now may the God of peace, who raised Christ from the dead, strengthen your inner being for every good work. And may God's blessing rest upon you today and evermore. Amen.